You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the corporate jungle. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, industry titans step up to the mic, sharing their epic journeys. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their careers, creating a symphony of success. This isn't just another interview show. It's where truth bombs are dropped and secrets are revealed. So grab your conductor's baton, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next huge hit of your career. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Drop the Needle podcast. I am your host, Jim Allstott, and I'm so happy you all decided to join us. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the challenge that a number of businesses face today, and that's decoding the mystery of finding top talent. We are very fortunate to have our guest today. We have Mr. David Schuneman. David has over 35 years of experience in full cycle recruiting. He's a senior partner at CPS Incorporated and a founder at Ad One, where he oversees multi-million dollar recruiting divisions and a team of 70 plus employees. David is also a trainer and has been interviewed by the Wall Street Journal and has been part of a docuseries on recruiting and happens to be a friend and colleague of mine since the beginning of my career in recruiting and talent acquisition all the way back to 1996. Friends, without further ado, please join me in welcoming Mr. David Schuneman.
Thank you, Jimmy. Nice to be here. What a, you know what? I should have you, like, when I come into work every day, I should say, hey, Jim, could you do that again? Just like, yes. Just remind everybody, you know, maybe they'll listen to me a little bit more. Maybe they, do you know who I am? Dang it.
Very important. Well,
pigeons, maybe band, more, fanfare. Maybe more importantly, at home. Hey, kids. Mary? Not so much.
Do you not know who I am?
I'm a pretty big deal.
Yeah, why don't you go pick up the dog poop?
That's my job anyway, bro. That's my job anyway.
I know. I get the kids going. Oh,
and you know, dude, do you know that we're outnumbered now, Mary and I? We have two what we thought were oh my god, what are they? Shih Tzus, and they're Pomeranians. I mean, oh, like, yeah, anyway. So we have three dogs now, which is. Three dog night. That means we don't sleep. I'm picking up poop.
Love
in
it.
The house. Yeah, no, so stupid. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Not the house so much, but anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah, all right.
Let's go ahead and dive right into
digress.
This.
Yes.
I'd really like to talk about something that might seem a bit dramatic, but I would like to discuss the Great Depression of human capital. Mm-hmm. And I guess, first of all, is it a real thing? Is there really a Great Depression in terms of human capital? And what is it, and what does it really mean to businesses?
Well, you would remember this back in the day. I think there was something like in 2010 or 2005. I think there was an article that came out. And this is what we're talking about. I know that, you know, well, what's happening right now? Well, there's a perfect storm that transpired. So I want to say 2005, James Carville wrote an article about in 2010, forecasting the future. In 2010, there will be the greatest disparity between baby boomers exiting the workforce and Generation Xers trying to replace them. It's something in the neighborhood of 65 million baby boomers and 25 million Gen Xers, right? And so needless to say, there's a gap, okay? And so we forecast that back then, and it was true. And we had a human capital shortage then. And it happened, and we and they're continuing to, of course, retire baby boomers, and then you get thrown COVID, and COVID right. all of a sudden gets to a place where, you know, and I don't want to get too heavy on it, you know, there's loss of life and things like that, but I'd say in relation when we're talking about the job industry and trying to find candidates. All of a sudden, you had those same baby boomers deciding, you know what, I can live with less because they had to, and then they there's the great retirement. Okay, so that's number two. Number three is all of a sudden there's a piece where you have a disgruntled group of employees for one reason or another. And I think there's a number of reasons for it. Number one, you know, you have a bunch of folks trying to the gig economy, trying to do their own thing, you know, versus going the corporate side. But then there's also that piece that came up during COVID because it had to is the remote workforce. And then people stayed there. So
I'm glad you mentioned that. I really am glad you mentioned that, because that's one of the big things that I'm hearing regularly from business owners and executives, right? Is the challenge that they're facing in attracting the talent. And it really is, I don't know what the real percentage is on it, but it's a pretty significant percentage. The pushback that they're getting as it relates to the whole return to work situation. And so, I guess my question is, you know, how has the hybrid or remote career push impacted companies in what was once an in-office or on-site workaday world?
Well, we used to say this, and you may remember this, a candidate is not motivated. Well, wait, a truly motivated candidate is moving away from something, not to it. Right. And that's, if you look at that, and if you really study that a little bit, which we have, it's true. It rings true. Well, and then all of a sudden, the remote workforce thing. I said, "Yeah, but wait a minute. They're going towards that workforce. Well, wait a minute. Or that workplace idea that they're going to work from home. But if your current company doesn't offer it, you are going away from that company, right? And so I think that was another piece to this whole perfect storm, so to speak. Now, what are we dealing with it? I think, as you know, more and more companies are starting to draw people back, and people are coming back. And I would say even with CPS, which is the parent company of AdOne. AdOne is the advertising recruiting arm of CPS. CPS, 12 different divisions. You were mentioning 70 employees, 60 of which are recruiters. Even here, we had some folks that came back and some folks that I said, you know what, they've been here for a number of years. And I said, I've had conversations with, I said, listen, if I can keep you longer, and if this prevents you from retiring and you want to, you know, continue to save for that nest egg, please stick around. And I've enabled them to do that remote thing. That being said, of course, because of the multiple divisions that we have, remote work doesn't work for everybody, right? CPS, there's chemists that need to be in the lab. They can't work from home. So that there's some folks that can do it and some that can't. For those that want their people back, I just don't know that this is something that is going to come back fully. And
you
it could
back into the in-office.
So yeah. Not fully. I think there are people coming back. Of course, companies are demanding it back and they are coming back. That does happen. I'm not saying that's not happening, but I think, I think the remote workforce is something has always been there with some industry before COVID and
well, certainly, you know, sales.
Exactly.
You can get away with that.
Financial advisors and that kind of thing. Sure. They're on the road anyway. So I think for your viewership, which are, when you say small business
corporations, you know, business owners. Yeah.
I would say you have to be comfortable with it somewhere. You know, my advice would be if you can't beat them, join them to a certain extent but there's a piece of this. I'm going to speak out of both sides of my neck here. I don't know how to train, and I'm speaking for my business. I don't know how to train somebody remotely as a recruiter. Like we benefit from having people in the vicinity watching what you're doing, et cetera. Right. And hearing how it's, you covered it this way, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you lose so much. And I know, and those that are against the remote workforce, some corporate America and the small businesses, large, et cetera, that's the same pain. So I think communicating it in such a way for me is to say, I don't know that I can do my best job for you if you're not in the vicinity or you're not through osmosis learning from those.
Sure.
That are in the island. So I think that's
takes
how do you deal
to
with
raise
that?
A child type
100%,
of mentality. 100%.
Yeah.
So that's
I wish I had a better answer.
No. Actually, you have the answer that's presented, right? So I know that in previous conversations with some of the execs, and in particular with the company that I do most of my work with, there was a real hope. That I know hope is not a strategy, but there was a real hope that there would be a, oh gosh, this is finally over. I'm ready to come back with my work friends and have that energy and everything, because there's something to be said for that.
100%.
You know,
you mean talk about environment or corporate culture kind of thing.
Correct.
Yeah. You know,
And that's something that, I mean, let's be honest, there are some companies that the corporate culture is their biggest offering.
CPS right? CPS was that, man. CPS. Yeah. I heard some folks, this is a very interesting change in the verbiage. You know, we said it's part of the family. It's really, you keep a team. Like some people might have a problem with family. Mm-hmm. I got my family. It's like,
right.
But it is my team. And so for what it's worth, but by the way, added to that whole thing is the great resignation. And yes. and that's 100% disgruntled folks. And I think it is to a certain extent the Gary Vaynerchuk's or Gary V's of the world that are saying, hey, whatever your side gig is, that could be your real gig, because now the communication that you have through social media, et cetera, is the world. So if you like, you know, I don't know, fans on your desk. I'm so stupid, but if you're a big fan of those, pun intended, be the person that is that person, and you'll find your people. And then all of a sudden now you have a website, you have a business plan, etc. So I think people are doing that. So we got to be mindful of the idea that people have more options than they've ever had before too, right? And I think
for
that's
sure.
The other piece on it too.
For sure.
I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the great resignation too.
You know, and that's where that whole phrase, term, whatever, and practice came about with that quietly quitting.
No. Nope.
Right?
Oh, God, what a...
Holy shit.
Man.
What a shit storm that.
No, I mean, hello? When I saw that, you know, when you see that in writing, and I go, who's quietly quitting me right now? I go,
oh my God, yeah. You start questioning everything.
Come here for a second. You know, but you know, at the end of the day, I can't control that. And what I can control, and I would, again, the listenership, if I'm going to be an evangelist for all y'all, I would say, trust your people, hire good. You know, there was early days of CPS, don't be afraid to hire, but don't be afraid to fire. Holy cow. How about hire better? And so we started hiring better. We started doing a better job hiring. And I would urge everyone, if your interview process is too long, shorten it a little bit. If your evaluation process is on point and you have five people that you're interviewing, hire the third one if that's the right person for the job and make that move. But you also have to onboard them correctly. Onboarding is we communicate about it all the time, but sell on the interview, sell your company, why you're the right place, sell your mentorship, and then have a timeline of how you bring them into into force. The beauty of what happened for us in relation to COVID is all of a sudden our talent acquisition person was purely a recruiter. All of a sudden now we said, you know what, let's fill in the blanks. Where are we
lacking or missing?
Where's blind spots?
Right.
And I love, you know, like I have all kinds of blind spots because I'm saying sales, go, let's get the people in here, let's train them, let's do that.
Well, it's a shark mentality. Keep moving forward.
You keep moving, right? And so, but at the same time, you have people smarter than I and looking at the peripheral, and saying, no, we got to do this, we got to do this. Heck yeah. And then all of a sudden we have a better onboarding, and then first right. week, second week, training, et cetera. I think that it's the onus is on us to do better too. I mean, at the end
agree.
Of the day,
I would agree.
And stay competitive.
And here's the thing. I think that we're the, pardon the comparison here, but the interviewing piece is like the honeymoon stage of things. And then
absolutely.
When you start to, the onboarding is like, you're okay, this is starting to get real. This is starting, mm-hmm. the proof is in the pudding, marital, you know, this is where the relationship begins.
Absolutely.
Because I do think it's really important. And I think it's something that's often overlooked by companies because they think, oh, our job's done. Just, you know, just come to work and you show up. And I guess some positions, maybe, but I don't even know that I can say that because I don't think that that's fair because it dehumanizes some of the things too, you know?
I think if you remember, Gallup did a thing back in the day was, and by the way, if you're managing people and if you haven't listened to First Break All the Rules, I strongly yeah. recommend that. And what it talks about, and it, you know, every once in a while you see a book that's written and you go, oh, that's what we thought all the time. Why can't we articulate it that way? Right. But they did, and why you don't need to, they've already done it. So part of that is create heroes in every role. And I think CPS has done a marvelous job with that from the sorcerer to the mm-hmm. assistant, you know, we have assistant level people that are partners with the firm now. And I think that's
sure.
Everybody has to see a direct line. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs to do that. I'm not saying that. We're a very flat organization too.
Appreciating the efforts that somebody and recognizing it too, right?
100%.
I mean, that goes a long way. So one of the other things that is prevalent, and I'm going to throw the ghost in the machine out there because of the police reference, you know,
yep.
but one of the other challenges that I wanted to discuss with you is ghosting. And what do you make of this whole ghosting epidemic? And do you have any insights or tips that might help our listeners at the very least minimize or limit ghosting?
Yeah, I think it is. It's unprecedented, right? It's like Jim and I, if I may speak for you, we have always been ghosted. Candidates ghost us, clients ghost us, and it doesn't make it right, but we've, you know, we understand that at times recruiters are a necessary evil. They need us when they need us, and you know, they're a best friend when they need us, right. and they don't. Right. Hey, I don't need you, and I, you know, and so we get ghosted on occasion, and we're thick skinned folks, and we can handle it. But anyway, sometimes it's I can handle it better some days. But anyway, right. I was going to go for another stupid thing, but I'll get back to what I was trying to think of. So, but for the first time. In my 35 years, you mentioned it earlier, 35 years in this business, it's the first time that I've seen candidates ghost corporate America and like Coca-Cola and Procter Gamble. And I mean, they're blowing off interviews. And I really do think that it's the gig mentality. I think it is, you know, to a certain extent. I've never been a person to speak of any generation over some other generation or anything like that. I'm just not that person right. because I have so many great individuals. When you say a stereotypical something about a generation, there's thousands of people that debunk that from another sure. generation. Right. So it's just, right. it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yep. That being said, in relation to generational thing, I've never seen this before in my 35 years. What generation is doing that, and what people are doing that? I don't know. What's the groundswell that makes it happen?
Yeah, is it specific?
Yeah.
Though? I really don't. I think
right.
it's this time frame. It's specific yeah. because I can attest to having people in their 40s ghost interviews,
yeah.
ghost, you know, first start, you know, your start date.
Yeah,
the no show, and it's just like, really, man, I didn't feel like calling. Okay, or they just don't answer your call, and that is something new. But here's the other side of that coin, and it's not to crap on corporate America too, but there's ghosting that goes on to the potential employees too.
I just got done saying that, folks. Yep.
Yeah, you know, and it's those folks. It's crazy It's crazy that it's happening on both sides. You know, it used to be that you could say, oh, poor me, or woe is me when that happens to you. But when both parties are doing it, that's something that's different too. And we've talked about it before on, you know, conversations with one another that, hey, shit happens, right? This is life. You know, things pop up, you know, couldn't make it into work. My son fell in gym class, broke his arm, what have you. Those things are isolated incidents, but to just, you know, unilaterally, no.
Well, and I think no show. That's to your point. Ask why, right?
Right, right.
You know, don't like I got into trouble on occasion with my employee, with recruiters here and et cetera, that I would go to the paint hard and say, what happened? But instead of just saying, hey, what happened? Why did this happen? And then they tell you and say, oh, okay, cool. So when can we reschedule? Right. And then you reschedule. But it's ghosting and then they're gone. So how do you rectify it? As a recruiter, the only thing that I know how, if I'm talking to some other recruiters, the only thing I know how to avoid ghosting with candidates is have multiple interviews for that candidate, right? So if you didn't like XYZ firm, you're going to like PDQ, and it's more apt to not blow off XYZ because I now have PDQ next. So I think that helps. But I don't know how corporate America takes
that's
something
from that.
That's
what I was going to ask, because it's
multiple divisions,
different, a different runway for you as a recruiter, because then you have, and I'll use air quotes, control of the situation. You never do, but
no.
And that was kind of my, but where I was hoping that you guys may have heard, because of the sheer number of employees there at CPS, what maybe some of the companies are doing to that. Only thing I could think of again is communication. But as I said, that just came out of my mouth, and I was like, my practice is to call the morning of or text and say, hey, friendly reminder, knock it out of the park today. Have some fun. Let me know if you have any questions. Give me a call after you're done. That's just ingrained in me to do. And when somebody responds to you, yep, getting ready to leave, and then they no show.
Yeah.
You go, what are you, a sociopath?
Yeah.
Seriously.
The answer is yes. So here's a couple things. And I think from a recruiter's perspective, you get multiple interviews for the candidate, of course. And I'm not, and you know, our model, when we pick up a job with a company, we're not sending them one candidate and then crossing our fingers. You know, we try to stack the job order 3 to 5 candidates, because we understand that our clients will interview 3 to 5 candidates before they make the hiring decision. Why not have those 3 to 5 be mine? So ours,
sure.
Ensuring the placement, but also getting feedback and enabling the process, maybe move it forward. I would suggest the same thing. Of course, you know, when you have a recruiter that's working on your jobs, you're saying, listen, I'm not going to hire the first person, but I need to see 3-4 candidates just in case something like this would transpire next, move on to the next person. Yeah. Right. And so I think that's, I don't know of anything other than that. And do a good job selling. I think that do a good job in the interview process. You know, don't fill your interview process with a bunch of tests. Have them in there. I think, you know, as many touches as you possibly can, and make sure you're reviewing who's doing the touching in relation to the person and how they interview. I knew it. Anyway, but you know what I'm saying? Like it's like get the right people doing the interview process, because there's folks that don't want to be part of it, and if you can find somebody in a department and the right people for it, I think that'll
makes
help
it
you
world
too.
The difference
world
again. Difference.
It's onboarding. The onboarding thing is it can help in that
absolutely
sense. Not to get into onboarding class, because that would be long and boring. Yeah.
Well, maybe another time.
Yeah.
Maybe another time, because I think it's certainly useful information for people,
for sure,
especially if they're unaccustomed to it.
Yeah.
But one of the other things that, with the whole ghosting thing, I was thinking about it as you were talking and asking why. I can say that I've had a few different times where even the, let's say the person goes in and interviews and, or they're on their way to the interview and something happens, right? Bad weather, what have you.
Yeah.
Somebody gets in a car accident. I actually had somebody take a picture of their vehicle in the ditch. Why? I don't know. Just, I guess they were.
Hey, beyond reproach. Here it is.
Right. That was basically it. And
this is my misfortune. Please don't pile on. You know,
yeah. Don't, I'm dealing with this right now.
I love it. Yeah.
I don't have any problem with that. So then I pass that information along, and then this is not my number one client. This was a few years ago, and I got the anybody could get one of those pictures.
That's when you go
time and date stamp on there.
Mechanic,
you're right.
I hope there's no mechanics here. I don't know how many times I've come to a, you know, here's a picture of your air filter. Is that really my air filter?
Oh my gosh.
But anyway, no, I'm kidding. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, the lesson is people act in their own perceived self-interest. I think people act in their own perceived self-interest. So the perception is the word perceived is there because we can have an effect on it. Right. And so if we're doing a good job answering questions from them and we're doing a good job interviewing, hopefully you're going to, when anybody interviews with a company said, man, this is where I want to be. And then it happens, right. Happens very quickly. That happens. Okay. And then I can't want it more for them than they want it for themselves.
Right. That's another big thing. Yeah.
They're all connected. I'm going to say this again too, and it's a snapshot of information you wouldn't have had otherwise. That's one of my favorite lessons in this business, because you can choose to deal with it, you can choose to do something about it, or you can just say, I'm full of quotes because I want to be as concise as I possibly can with training people, with communicating with my people,
right,
with my wife. I mean, sometimes that doesn't work too good. So it's like that place of, okay, it didn't. Okay, the car went into a ditch. Sounds good. Schedule the interview. Have that back in mind. Okay, right. If there's other things that are happening, and we talk about placements, you know, every relationship is foreshadowed. Something you hear early in the process is the reason they don't take the job ultimately. And hopefully, you do a good enough job when those red flags come up to communicate with them. How did you, like we say, postpartum with recruiters? How did you handle that? Like, what did you say? How did you say it? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That all checks out. That sounds good. People not acting their own perceived self-interest. They've obviously have something else that they're going on, and they're going to go in a different direction next. And I think that's unfortunately what you have to do.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? We're talking about people, and people change their minds. They change like the wind. So,
yeah.
And is it? Does it suck sometimes? Yeah. I mean, sometimes it can bring on a lot of pain, but at the end of the day, it is just a snapshot or a microcosm of what happens in your life too.
And don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I know I'm going with a lot of isms right now, but that it's true. And I think there's two things too. The going back to your original question, I heard something in relation to what's the business, the human capital shortage piece and the ghosting piece. Like, a lot of this is related. And I think, somebody, I read this somewhere, in the future, in 10 years or 20 years, we're going to say, so this is what a soft landing feels like. And we're in the middle of an election year. I mean, there's all kinds of things are happening. It's never just one thing. Like there's always just a perfect storm of things. And that's just what we're living through right now.
So, you know what, since we're going back, there was something that came up when we were talking, and I'm going to jump back to that remote or hybrid type of thing. And we touched on it just ever so lightly, and that was the trust factor and hiring better. But the trust factor really does come into play as it relates to a lot of this stuff, right? I mean,
100%.
And I think in particular as it relates to corporate, you know, for companies that were unaccustomed to having people out of the office because it was, well, how do I know they're working? You know what I mean? And now in some businesses, let's say it's sales or some financial thing or even computer programming, how do you know somebody's working? Well, they've got their activity numbers, their busy work numbers going along, and you see those things, you see that progression happening. But then there are some positions or roles out there it's hard to do.
Yeah. In a sales place, we know how many calls you make, we know how many emails are coming, we know how many emails are coming in. You know, we talk about send outs when we're scheduling interviews, sending a candidate out to interview, right. How many job orders you write, how many placements you make, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. We have so much connective tissue, and that's why our business lends to a good remote workforce. I still don't know how to train a remote recruiter. I had a brother that worked for me, and I could be extremely candid, inappropriately candid with my brother, and I can't do that with somebody else. So it's like, how do you do it? And there's workarounds. Computer screen looking right at them, you spend the day, they look at you, you're looking at them in the morning, and then you send them off to do their thing. But it's an unproven thing. And to your point, again, a chemist, I have to be right. I don't think that they really did much remote, so there's not much change there. Like right. What's an industry that you know of that you know, off the top of my head, I don't know, like one that did give, let them out. They had the rope, and then now it's like even heavier to get back in here. Accounting maybe is like, and we have an accounting division, but I don't know off the top of my head.
I think with a lot of the programs that are in place today, whether the ERP systems, they could be, SAP has just got a huge piece, and PeopleSoft and all of those other things. I think that it's there so can work remotely. But obviously, where the big one is, the first one that comes to mind is manufacturing, right? Yeah. I mean, anything that's really, with the exception of sales.
Supply chain's okay, I guess.
Supply chain could be, yeah. I mean, but the nice thing is if you're in office, then you can meet with those folks. But supply chain could be. But it really is. So manufacturing, I look at it that way. That's got to be, you've got to be in person. You've got to be 100%. On site.
Well, I'm talking about the ones that let them out and now are saying the most difficult getting them back. I wonder what that is. Yeah. I have no idea. I don't. That doesn't. Because for your viewership, listenership, I'd want to know, like, okay, and that's when call a recruiter, talk to me about it.
Scheduling for manufacturing, that's one that was done remotely, and now they're like, come on back, and it's like, I know that to be true.
Okay, good. I can see that.
So that's because part of that scheduling process is, machines down, machines up. And making sure that you have that production schedule in place too.
Right.
And there's a lot of calls coming back and forth depending upon the size of the organization what they're running. So there is a lot of that. And I think I even told you in a previous conversation where I had a gentleman who was working on a maintenance manager position, and the fellow wanted to know if it was remote. And it's like, no.
How could it be?
He said,
I've got a drone that I'll send to you.
Well, yeah, they've got the computer program and these cameras. And I said, yeah, right. They do. Because, when you're in manufacturing, if you're doing a high speed thing, they've got that little computer eye that will kick out the bad quality. And I was like, they do. But, if they have that, then there's really no need for you anymore.
Which is going to be... That's
work yourself
slippery
out of
slope.
Yeah. And I just said, I'm sorry, I can't, this isn't it. But if you find something, let me know, because I'd really like to know the company that does that,
would enable that.
Well, I mean,
and how they do it.
How? Yes. That's what I want to know. I want to know the how. But anyway. So in talking about machines, there's a nice segue into that.
I knew you were going
to
go.
Which is the I'll be back segue, the Terminator, the AI that's going on.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, since that was in the Wall Street Journal, that was one of the big things that they discussed with you. Mm-hmm. They wanted to know how AI was impacting the advertising industry. Yeah. And you spoke to that. So I think it's appropriate then to ask that question. What do you, sure. what do you see going on there?
Well, I think there's a couple things at play. And I think with the article, the reason why they did advertising is they said, how is it going to disrupt it? How has it disrupted? You know, what is the future, et cetera, et cetera, and so on and so
right.
forth. So they had myself and another recruiter and mutual friend of ours, Sasha Martins, and then some advertising executives. And, you know, so they're just like, how did we think it was, how is it going to affect us? And I think a couple things. From a recruiter's perspective, you know, and everybody is, are they going to take our jobs?
I think
there is going to be some of that. You know, there will be some of that. But I think they're support level jobs to a certain extent. And then I think to begin with, and there's a blind spot for me on this because again, I don't know when you say the business intelligence and it's learning from itself. I don't know where that's going. So I'm not going to speak with conviction of things I know not. That being said, from a recruiter's perspective, and I think I would say this to many of you, your listeners, that so whenever there was a manifestation of some sort in my 35 years as a recruiter, you know, in the early days, we were fax and follow up. That was the technology. We had a phone and a fax. Right, okay. Right. And thankfully, we progressed. And so the internet came and then we started thinking in terms of security. Oh, how are we going to keep everything secure if we have this computer that everybody's accesses? Of course. And then is that going to take market share? The next piece was job boards. Of course, we said, okay, job boards, is that going to take our market share? Why would you need us if you could post a job post and have people job, respond, right, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And then the greatest tool known to recruiters is LinkedIn. And I think, you have a directory of everybody known to man, woman, and child on this site. Okay. And intellectual property, you know, is that who owns that? What's the, okay. So each time we had these manifestations, everything that come up, we said, is it going to take market share? Well, the recruiters ended up wielding these tools better than the average Joe, because that's the place we live in. And that's how we use the can-do attitude, the type A personality, and then the work ethic that these recruiters have. And when I talk about that, I'm talking about single percentile recruiters, as well as folks that are maybe a little less than that.
Right.
That end up wielding these tools better than the average person out there. So then that happens. So I think AI, specifically, right now is, and even I would say this, I don't know the month, I'm bad with timing and things, but I don't remember the month that we did this through Wall Street Journal, but in short order, there has been progress. And I think they say, all the experts right. say, if you think it's 5 years, it's probably three. Okay. So it's coming and it's here, but I think at this juncture, and you know better than me, on what the tools are, but ChatGPT and the like, mm-hmm. And its ilk, it's impressive. I mean, another mutual friend of ours asked me to come and speak to his class at a university, and I said absolutely. What do you want me to talk about? Well, how has AI disrupted the recruiting industry? And I said, okay, well, shoot, I'm driving home. I instantaneously download ChatGPT and I say, last 10 years, in the next 10 years, how is it affected? Before I could put it back in the holster, the thing was buzzing. And I, and That's at the crazy, next stoplight, isn't it? Oh, it was unbelievable. And then at the stoplight, I pull it, look at it. I go, wow, I have now a plan for this class. And that was beautiful to me. I was like, because I don't know about you, Jim, but I'm one that writes down. Or types, oh, yeah. Yeah, and yeah, then yeah. I type some more, and then I do it again, and then I go to sleep. And then I look at it again. I go, oh, that's another hour, another. And sometimes it's happening at three in the morning. I'm writing these things down, you know, and then I'm like, oh my God, I'm never going to sleep. But then I do it. And then I go get back to sleep and I'm fine. That being said, for it to spit out like that, I was like, oh, this is great. And after further review, there was one piece that disrupts in the last 10 years that it neglected, which was in the a very important one, Equal Pay Act. Maybe the most disruption in the industry for years and years. It's important, you know, blah, blah, blah. So you have to scrub the data that is your that you receive. And sure, sure. You know from your database, garbage in, garbage out. You know from big data in relation to business intelligence, it's you can get a lot of information. If you look at, you know, who's responding or who's getting back to you through your website and you get those analytics, there's a lot of garbage to weed through and you have to have the right person look at it. Right. And
yes,
so,
yes, you do.
So you just like it has to be scrubbed by the right person. Otherwise you could spend a lot of time in the wrong direction in business and we don't have time for that. Right.
Yeah.
But that being said, the time savings that that would enable internal communication with CPS, I think we do a little bit of that using the ChatGPT. It used to be frowned upon if you cut and pasted the job description from a human resource executive and send it to internal team because did you really have a conversation with them? And now what kind of cooperation are we going to get if that's not there, right? So I think the internal communication is going to help. I think that's what we're going to use it for. But I'm hook, line, and sinker in relation to what I think ultimately is going to do outside of our doors. I think it's going to cure some diseases. I think it's going to do some really good stuff.
You hope, right? I mean,
but
that's what
Skynet, your Skynet comment is apropos because who is quarterbacking this thing and who's regulating it?
Yeah,
that's a problem. A comedian, one of my favorite comedians said, "You gave the internet to teenagers." It's the same thing here.
Yeah, it is.
So
that's interesting that you say that because Joe Rogan was talking about that very recently. That there's absolutely no reason. He went in so far as to talk about AI and recreating the Big Bang.
Oof. Yeah, this is a paradigm shift. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to go back to a couple of things. Number one. Checking out your cell phone while at a stoplight, a citizen's arrest right there. That's a ticket. It's on tape. So save it for the judge.
Okay, big brother.
At the stoplight. So what do you think those cameras are there for?
Yeah. Okay.
Watching you pick your nose.
I might have been in a parking lot.
Okay. Anyway,
what else, Dan?
So the other one was, you know, your expertise. I was surprised our friend didn't ask you to demonstrate breakdancing because little known to people is Dave used to bring linoleum and cardboard wherever he went. And he's like, hold on. And he'd like open up his car doors and turn up the music really loud.
People, I'm 6'4", 260 pounds. I am never going to do that. And I never was. That's a lie. Anyway.
I don't know that it is. You can't prove it.
Can I go back to something that would provide hope in a way? I forgot to neglect.
You breakdancing?
That's hopeless. Hopeless. And no, stand ahead. And get away. You know, back off. Back away.
Something bad's going to happen.
You might get a heel. You might get a heel.
Heel kick to the back of the head.
Or this cranium. So I get like the human capital shortage piece. I was doing, so I'm part of, as a senior partner with the firm, I'm part of reviewing all the recruiters, at least the senior recruiters and market specialists and the executive level folk in recruiting. And I sat scratching my head. You know, we have a lot of jobs and of course, job rich applicant poor environments are good for recruiters, right? But there was a piece where the recruiters just kept after one after the other. We're just having a devil time finding candidates. And this is recently.
Okay.
And all of a sudden the light came on because of the post COVID, bull market in relation to making placements. Mm-hmm. We were drinking out of fire hoses because we weren't marketing candidates at all. We didn't need to because it was everybody had an opening. Yeah, that's it. And oh, by the way, we filled that one and I need another one. What? And yeah. That was great. Great problem to have. Still a problem. Anyway. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I'm fairly certain that more people made job changes in that period of time than ever, maybe internationally, but I know nationally. And because there was recruiters make the crazy numbers that these people were making.
21 to 23. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have said you're better with the, I'm a goof with that stuff. So yeah. 21, 23. And, so we're having trouble finding kids, trying to follow again. He's like, okay, I get it. Well, I don't get it. If a lot of people made job changes in 2021, you said 21 to 23,
21 to 23. Yeah.
It's logical for them to not feel the need to not make another job change. And so, you know, we typically, and at least in America, I think candidates will make job changes. They'd consider it every 3 years, but they'd consider it more seriously longer than that, 5 years or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
And so I'm forecasting right now, I'm going to rub my crystal ball, that I think 2025.
No, that's his five head, by the way.
You should talk.
You, yeah, I know.
okay. Yeah. Anyway. But so I think 2025 is going to be a place, and especially again, we talked about it being an election year currently.
Right. Yeah.
It's always been a funny market during elections, of course. Number two, I think 2025 is going to be a time when things will loosen up a little bit, and I think we will have more folks, and I think there's going to be people that, but I do believe, going back to the remote workforce thing, if you can let them work remote, I would strongly recommend enabling that, because I just don't think that's going anywhere, or potentially a you know, maybe not every day, you know,
hybrid,
but a hybrid model approach, yeah. I think works. And
yeah,
that's the only thing I would say. 2025, I think we're in a good place. Come there, 26, 27, et cetera, if you can hold tight.
Well, you know, it's also one of those things that geography no longer binds you. You know, there's no handcuffs as it relates to geography at that point. Right?
We talked about that. You're again. So I believe to find true talent requires a search. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you want to run an ad, you're going to find the best people on the market that are interested in making a job change. Mm-hmm. Everyone really wants the passive job seeker, that individual who is gainfully employed, doing very well for themselves. And,
right.
But in the event that something makes itself available, they communicate that to a recruiter that they trust. Okay. And so I think that becomes the place where I think, you're going to find true talent when we do a search versus sure. waiting and hoping and see what comes. Cause we run ads too. We run ads too. And we know what we get with those ads on occasion. We get some good folks and we place them, of course, but that's a rough one.
Yeah, for what's worth. I get it. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that and sharing your insights. So as we go into the next phase of the show here, which is the musical phase.
Yeah.
All right. For those of you who are familiar, you know that there's a musical piece to every podcast. And for those of you that aren't familiar and are just joining us today, every podcast has a section at the end that involves music, because as I say every time, I believe music is the tie that binds, and I believe everyone has a soundtrack to their life, and it's amazing what music can do to you. It can bring you back to a particular time, a particular place, a particular person, all of those things, and it really is a magical form of medium. It's just special. So with that in mind, we're going to start the questions. And I asked this question of everyone, and so far, I've not gotten a repeat answer. What was the first song you fell in love with from the radio, or one that you heard and you can remember saying, man, I want to hear that one again, and scrambling to find it?
Can I sing it? I'm kidding.
Yes, please.
I can carry a tune, not like Mr. Choir Boy over there. Mr. Operatic. I was taught by. I remember, and I knew you were gonna ask this question, of course, and I'm laughing about my response, but I, you know, I'm not BSing you on this. So, okay. My first two answers, I want to get through real quick, so I'll just spurt it out. So it's Everybody Was Kung Fu Fighting by Carl Douglas.
Fantastic song.
Well, so the story behind it is, I just turned 60, ladies and gentlemen. But when I was about 8 years old, I think, and I should have looked at the timing of this when it came out, but I'm sitting at my childhood desk drawing comics. I was a big Marvel comic book fan, still am. And, Hulk is the greatest, strongest one there is, by the way. Superman. I don't think so. Thor.
Nope. Human.
Anyway. So, yeah.
Strongest.
So
Avenger.
It's true. So I'm drawing these comic books, and on my little transistor radio, AM, FM, ooh, that's nice. And I had that song came on, and I remember, like, wow. And again, in those days, kids, we weren't able to repeat the song. So I go, oh, when can I hear that again? And then
dancing?
It was absolutely a great, I mean, and then when it doesn't necessarily hold up. I hear, and then my one day I told my wife that story, and then the next day she makes me a shirt that says, "Surely not everyone was kung fu fighting."
I freaking love that. Love that.
Me too. Me too.
That's okay. Amazing. Okay, so question number two.
Yeah.
Is did your family have a song that everyone would belt out on road trips in the family truckster?
Yeah, and it was the family truckster too, man. I was sitting backwards in the station wagon on a bench seat with no harness, no seatbelt. And we have a place in the Canadian North Woods. We're musky fishermen as a family, but we, at the time, was whatever you could catch, right? But driving up to Canada, Neil Diamond, Song Song Blue. And it was just, and I'm not kidding. Both of those songs, I don't hear a Carl Douglas' song very often. But Neil Diamond, I hear that song. And every time I hear Sweet Caroline at stadiums across the United States, I go, that's not even his best song, man. But anyway, So Song Song Blue. The soundtrack of your life, whatever.
Yes.
That, yes. I'm an 8-year-old kid sitting backwards, driving from Chicagoland, Illinois, to the Canadian North Woods. It's every freaking
that's
time
so
I
cool.
hear it. Yeah, it is. It's great.
That's so cool. I love that.
Me too.
So the next one, what are your top five songs on your hype playlist? And these are the songs that make you want to absolutely crush your day.
Okay. I think these are current. I mean, this is my current list. Is that what we're talking about? Not all time.
It could be whatever you want it to be, because it always changes for me.
Right.
Quite honestly.
No, this would be my last 4 years. Okay. Cool. Wild Child by the Black Keys. I think the Black Keys are.
I love those guys.
I'm going amazing. To see them in November. Can't wait. Can't. Oh, I've never seen them live. I can't wait. At United Center.
Fantastic.
I'd know every song. Enemy by Imagine Dragons, which I think is getting kind of a bad rap lately. And my son Maxwell was like a huge fan. And when I go, oh man, I can't wait to take him to go see Imagine Dragons because I know they're going to be great live. I can't wait. What?
I think because there was a joke about that. You ever hear Imagine Dragons? Imagine dragging my balls over here.
Sorry, folks. I'm pissed.
I might have to cut that.
There goes the Imagine Dragons reference. Ain't No Rest for the Wicked by Cage the Elephant. Have you listened to that song, by the way?
No, I'm waiting until we get everything put together.
Okay, cool. No, Ain't No Rest for the Wicked. Cage the Elephant is... we went to see them because my wife's a big Beck fan, and we went to see them at... Weaver the Island. And great spot. That's for those of you that are not in the Chicagoland area, it's an island right off the coast. And by the way, Chicago is there's a big lake that looks like an inland sea if you're in Europe. And it's beautiful. Anyway... and then Dangerous by Big Data. That last one, or I'm sorry, Loser by Beck. And Beck is my wife. My wife did it to me. I'm a huge Beck fan now. And then Beck Dangerous, 100%. And then Dangerous by Big Data, which is somewhat obscure, but I'm telling
you,
man.
I'm psyched to listen to this.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait.
I'm so psyched to listen to this, and I hope I'm not building it up too much in my head, but I think it's going to be good.
No, I'm telling you.
I think it is.
Yeah, we have similar musical taste in this. Jim's more country than I am, although Chris Stapleton should be on my list, and I could tell
he's
you what's
very that. Talented.
Well, my daughter, she went to Kentucky. First year, she went to Kentucky and ended up transferring, but she went to Kentucky her first year, and driving down, all of a sudden, I heard Chris Stapleton, and I said, is this Almond Brothers? Who is Almond Brothers? I go, what is it? And she goes, no, Pops, this is Chris Stapleton. And I love Chris Stapleton. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, he's good. He's really, really talented.
It's great stuff. It's good stuff. Yeah.
So the next one is, in high school, I'm curious if you had one of those, you know, kick-ass anthems that, you know, you and your boys would listen to and be like, oh yeah, oh yes, run through the wall.
You know, Def Leppard was a big thing. Everybody loved Def Leppard. I was never a huge fan. I just didn't. I too close to the hair band stuff that I wasn't a big fan of. But I would say, like,
I'm sorry,
I know AC/DC was always a big deal for me, but I'd say like REO Speedwagon kind of jumped the shark shortly after high school for me, but their Decade of Rock, High Fidelity,
right.
You can tune a fish, but you can tune a piano, but don't tune a fish, which I thought was can't tune
did
a fish.
357 Riverside Avenue.
Yeah, yes, they
that's
did.
A great jam.
Yeah,
oh my god,
Golden Country.
Oh shit,
it's like it was the, you know, it's the jam bands, right? They started as a jam band and then they turned into kind of like a little more poppy hits. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they've got a respectable portfolio of music, of course.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
So then right after school, and you know, some go to college, some go to work, some do whatever. Did your musical tastes change?
Well, I didn't, point? You know, you had said Ghost in the Machine earlier, and that's a reference to probably my favorite band all time is The Police. And I think
really?
The Police and INXS were bands that I said, what's that? You know, and I think some bands have come up. I think Cage the Elephant is one that has a similar kind of like, oh, that's new. That's something different. Imagine Dragons, I think that's another band that like is, oh, that's new. That's something
different. I think they're underrated, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
Imagine Dragons, personally.
And Live, I guess they're really, really great. But anyway, to your question, Police. I still love The Police. And I wish they would do more. I know Sting is doing his own thing and Copeland does his own thing and, you know, et cetera. Andy does his own thing. But I think Andy, I'm on first name basis with Andy Summers, by the way.
Very cool.
but The Police, again, three people like Rush. Three people that put that kind of music out. There's a reggae to it. There's a rock to it.
Freaking big, it's just ass sound
killer.
Too.
Yes,
big, just like Rush. I mean, you think about
it. Unbelievable.
Three dudes going up there and sounding like it's a 6-7 piece band.
Crazy. Just, and the lyrics are great. Amazing. The lyrics are great. And oh, yeah. Okay, then I'll go back to what did I say? Oh, INXS.
INXS too. Yeah.
Can you tell your hip cool story about INXS real quick for the people listening?
Oh,
I know you too well, so I can have you say something stupid too.
Yeah. Do I have to tell everything about it?
Just real quick.
Okay.
Just
so
2 seconds.
So, when I was at Illinois State University, the fraternity I belonged to did security for INXS, and I had the opportunity to meet them, and we went to, after the show, they were staying at a hotel nearby near the interstate. And I sang at a bar in there called the Sassafras Lounge. Sassafras Lounge, they closed it up and everybody came in there and we proceeded to party and we had water gun fights with the soda guns and stuff like that. And Michael Hutchins was over in the corner.
It's crazy.
Brooding and everything. But I left out how it all started with, hey, can you go get us some, they were looking for marijuana, and I personally had no idea, so I had to go make some phone calls and see if we could find somebody. And lo and behold, it was in their seat before you knew it. But
of course.
Yeah. I mean, those guys were really cool. And it was amazing. I was like, hey, what's up with him? Why is he not getting involved with it? And one of the guys, I think he's one of the brothers, he says, oh, he's all fucking uptight all the time.
Michael?
Yeah.
Well, dude, I think, again,
he was brooding.
He was Morrison. He was Morrison.
Very much so.
He was Mick Jagger. He was the combination of those things.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
I can't wait. You know, after listening to it, what I usually do is if I'm intrigued by it, and I go look for live clips on some of the, if I haven't heard of them, and I'll look at YouTube. What a great thing to have.
Well,
YouTube always has that stuff.
Well, and what I've done is, like, I've taken, and I know my kids roll their eyes. The Spotify pops, you know, okay.
Oh, I love Spotify. Spotify is my favorite.
And it is, but Pandora, you go to the Cage the Elephant station, and all of a sudden, you're hearing their, like, you know, anybody that they're like. That's how I turn myself on to new music, and that's how I get.
Turn yourself on to new music. Nice tag on that.
That's all stupid.
I know.
Okay, next question, right. You son of a. Okay.
I know. Sorry. So, what's the best song that describes you or your company currently?
Again, I think I'm going to go back to a place that I think. There's a bunch of songs in the recruiting industry, and I would say this company, and I think recruiting period, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, you get what you need. Stones. And I'm glad I referenced the Stones, greatest rock band of all time, arguably. And you got to reference the Stones. And I did Mick Jagger earlier, but you may not get it, but you're learning. And every problem is a challenge, and it gets you to a place where, okay, wait a minute. Positivity is a strategy. If I just come in with a can do and I keep rowing, I'll be fine. And I think that's the piece. And then eventually you get what you need, which is, a good 401k, a good profit sharing, a good vacation
financial
home,
freedom,
all that stuff. Exactly. Yeah. All that things. Yeah, good car. But anyway.
So, I'm going to skip to the last song because we're running out of time here. And, or the last question, I should say.
Yeah,
not the song.
Sure.
I apologize. So there are songs you know that ring so true, and they just can sometimes stop you in your tracks, right? And they sound as though the lyrics were written specifically for you or by you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any song like that you could think of and of the lyric?
I have a lot, but I would say the one that hits home for me specifically, again, pun intended, is Home by Michael Bublé. And first off, my wife and I, when we got together originally 15 so years ago, Bublé was kind of coming out, and we heard him, and it was like immediately it reminded us of one another. And Home, I can't quote the lyrics. That being said, there was another thing that happened. So that was already kind of our band, our together guy, and then Home became kind of our song. And when I was going to propose to Mary, I went to our favorite restaurant kind of on a stage, and so I said perfect, and I set it up on purpose that we're going to be up above, and I was going to, ladies and gentlemen, please may I have your attention real quick, and then I was going to drop to a knee and propose to my wife. And in the middle of the appetizer, I said, you know what, should it be just the two of us, and if somebody sees it, that's fine. This is really just our moment. And so, long story short, Home comes on in the restaurant, and I just drop to my knee, hand her the ring, and she starts crying immediately. I mean, she knew she was part of the, okay, I think this is working out. She knew we were serious, but the Home song plus that, we'll never forget that night for obvious reason.
All right. That's wonderful. And thank you so much for sharing that. That's
of course.
That is such a cool thing, because I mean, think about it, from years and years and years down the road, you just hear that song and
it's our song.
Yeah. Man, oh man. That's good stuff. Well, It's just about time to cue the music for today's episode. So don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on our latest episodes. I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone for tuning in today, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Drop the Needle podcast. And a big thanks goes out to our very special guest, David Schuneman, for joining us today. And I invite you to head over to our show notes where there's a link showing you how to grab that playlist from today's episode. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of the show, this is the end of our show. And until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health, happiness, and the perfect playlist for your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.